civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning, Tribe World. It's Ray here again in another lockdown interview. I hope you're all keeping well. Each country seems to be in different stages, so whatever stage you're in, I hope you're all keeping safe and positive and not getting too distressed with all the crazy complications that have gone on over the past little while. Now, I'm joined by a tremendous young man who's very loved by all within our tribal fandom, and I'd like you to join me in welcoming the very talented Ari Boylan. Good morning, Ari. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very good. Great to talk to you, Ray. Good to be here.
It's great to hear your voice, Ari, after this. Well, you're up, and we were just discussing before we started recording, you're in the middle of shooting a movie, Ari.
Yeah, we just actually yesterday had our first day back after the full lockdown break that we had in New Zealand. We're very lucky to be one of the first places in the world to be back to fully functioning work mode, and one of the first productions in New Zealand to be back as well. So I'm in the middle of day two. I have a break in between my scenes, so it's perfect. I've been able to jump on a call and have a chat with you.
Oh, that's fantastic. And Ari, that's an interesting role you're playing. Are you able to tell the listeners what the thematic is? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. The film is called Poppy, and it's based, it follows the story of a young Down syndrome girl who's coming of age and trying to pursue her dreams, and dealing with the obstacles that she faces due to the perceptions of the world and the people around her based on what she can and cannot do. And it has a very, very tenacious, amazingly entertaining young girl named Libby Hunsdale in the lead, they held auditions through schools, much like the tribe did back when you were getting ready to film, and they found her out of Whanganui High School. And she does herself have Down syndrome as well, and is just an incredible young woman. But I play her older brother, who is also her caregiver, who has quite a dark start to the story, but is a great redemptive story. He's battling with alcoholism and guilt around actually being the cause of the parents' death through a car accident. It's a really uplifting story, but the character arc for myself is quite a meaty one. It's really great.
And I'm fantastic. That's a part, Ari, is for you. I think you do very well. That's a lovely part.
I'm not sure at this stage how it's going to be released and whatnot, but there will be information out about that at the time.
Well, when you know, you should let us know, and we'll get our try Facebook and our social media onto that. And so all listeners out there, you keep an eye out for that.
That would be fantastic.
It's interesting, Ari lives, or not lives, your mum lives in a little town close to where my vineyard is. And so Ari pops in now and then to the vineyard. And sadly, I've missed you on the last couple of times you've been there, Ari. I've been traveling.
Yeah. I don't think I've actually seen you on your vineyard. I've seen Toby and Saran and the rest of the family, but not you. So I'll keep on trying.
I'll be back there, I hope, not too long from now. And as a lot of listeners know, I'm kind of stranded here in Australia, which isn't a bad place to be, I have to say. In the winter here, it's a deep blue sky. And you're up in a place called the Kapiti Coast, Ari. That's a nice part of the world. There.
It's about an hour north of Wellington on the east coast of New Zealand. Two very, very nice places to be stuck.
Right. And were you born in Wellington, Ari? Were you raised up in Wellington or Auckland?
I was. Yeah, no, I was born in Wellington in Lower Hutt, actually, really close to the old Cloud9 studios.
Wow.
My grandmother and my father actually lived right around the corner from the offices. It was literally in my backyard.
That's terrific, isn't it? And Ari, since the tribe, you've been very busy and you're pursuing your acting career, and maybe we could have a chat about that before we get to some of the, we've got a lot of questions, and I'll get to that in a minute. But basically, after the tribe, did you move then to the States, to LA?
Yeah, so I did, it was season one through three of The Tribe, then went back to school, was craving a bit of normality and went back and completed high school. I did a few jobs periodically, but nothing as long-term as The Tribe through the rest of high school. And then I moved to Auckland for about 6 years and was working up there because the industry seemed to be pumping a little bit more. And was on a few different shows. I did the Shortland Street in New Zealand and an episode of Power Rangers and a few different things. And then, yeah, I actually had a film that pulled me over to the United States, which led me to live there for about 6 years. And wade through the long audition lines of LA casting agents and whatnot. Yeah. But then, funnily enough, the way that the industry's gone with self-tapes, I mean, all of my auditions by the end of my time in Los Angeles were for American productions through Australian casting agents coming from my New Zealand agent. So it kind of seemed like a bit of a rigmarole when to be fighting through to get an audition in the room in Los Angeles where really I could be wherever I wanted if I was getting self-taped. So I just decided to make the jump to Sydney, which has been really lovely because the lifestyle there that you can afford in Sydney, you buy the beaches, the public transport's great, the people are really lovely. It just made for a much better, a much more conducive lifestyle to mental health, I think, more than anything.
How long were you in Shortland Street for?
I did 1 year.
Okay, because that's a big show, and that's a big series around the world. I know it's on in the UK and several other countries. It still is an iconic title and franchise. How did you enjoy playing? What role did you play on Power Rangers?
I loved it. I was a blue Power Ranger in my season. It was so much fun. It was incredible. I mean, ever since The Tribe, I was really lucky to have been able to take part in doing a lot of stunts and fight sequences and that kind of thing. So it's always been something that I've really, really loved to do. And we just got to really get thrown completely into it. We did a 2-week fight training camp and stunts and different things. And it was a really, really great show to work on. And especially something that while they recast every single season, the crew was such a well-oiled machine. And especially the second unit with all of the stunts and fighting and things like that. So it was just incredible. It was an absolutely amazing production to be a part of. I had so much fun doing it. And the fandom from that as well, like The Tribe, is a really, really dedicated fan base. And it's just awesome to be able to get feedback from them. And it's great.
That's good. Do you do any conventions on that area or not?
Yeah, actually, that was something that I got to take part in when I was in the United States. Every 2 years, they have it's called Power Morphicon, which is the specifically Power Rangers convention that was really started grassroots from the fandom that's grown so massively, and now because the franchise has kind of been rebooted a couple of times, it just seems to be getting bigger and bigger. It's really incredible. I was lucky to I got to go to Kentucky, Nevada, Florida, New York. Just kind of got to bounce all over the place. It was incredible.
And Ari, we get a lot of listeners who actually some want to get into the industry, some have dreams, you know, pursuing their dreams as actors, writers, whatever, but yeah, living in LA, how did you find that for 6 years? That would have been quite an experience.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's hard to quantify that period of a time. There were great, great times. There were really, really hard times. It's quite a process, but it's an incredible place in the sense that it really is where things can happen at the drop of a hat. There's incredible opportunities there. But there's also incredible competition too. You go to any bar, you go to any restaurant, you go to every bartender is an actor or a singer or a model or whatever. And it can be quite hard to find yourself, to maintain a strong sense of self in amongst the crowd. It was a really amazing period of growth for me. In terms of being my own drive and motivation and not requiring a lot of push from outside of myself, which was hugely beneficial. And I see the benefit now, but obviously going through it could be quite hard at times. But it's an incredible city. It's a beautiful place to live. My goodness, if you love sunshine, and beaches, and it's incredible.
No, I spent some time out there, Ari, in my early days as a screenwriter, and again, it's the same thing. I always joke that if you're stopped by a policeman for speeding and he notices you're in the business, he'll slip you a script. You know that everybody's in the industry. It's Mecca. And in that way, it's, you know, it's a business, and I understand that. But it can tend to be a bit superficial at times. And
100%. Absolutely. There is an equal proportion of the best people in the world and the worst people in the world. It attracts all sorts. But this is the amazing thing about the way that technology in the industry globally has gone, is the access really is there so much more now. While there's a lot more people doing it, there is a limitless ability to create your own content and release your own content on different platforms and gain notoriety in different ways. You're not tied to the traditional systems that have existed in the past. So it's a really exciting time.
Yeah, I think it is. We often say if you're creative, it's like an itch that needs to be scratched, and you've got to scratch it and keep doing it and never give up. And I mean, that's LA, it's like a city of dreams and a city of heartbreak as well. It's you just must never, ever, ever give up. And I mean, as an actor, you live with, I mean, you would perceive how you, I mean, if you don't get a part, you can kind of take it personally, I suppose. And it's,
you really can't. If you want to be doing it for a long period of time, you really have to. I actually have a bit of a ritual with every audition that I do. When I go in with holding the script sides that they have, is I walk out and rip the script and throw it in the first bin and then just forget about it. Because your job as an actor is, what I've come to recognize, is you're a professional auditioner. That's your job. Your job isn't to get a job. Your job is to audition. So once you've done that job, it's done, you forget about it. If something comes beyond that, if you get a call back or anything else, it's a bonus. It's fantastic. But your job specifically is just to audition. And that's really, that perspective has really saved me. Because, I mean, you think about, you know, the number of parts that I haven't got far, far, far outweighs the number that I've gone for. So you have to really do what it takes to develop that sense of tenacity to just keep on pushing. If it's what you love to do, as you say, if it's an itch that has to be scratched, you just got to keep on scratching it.
And nothing succeeds like persistence and patience, really. And
yeah, the only guaranteed way to fail is to quit.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And you never, never, you never don't succeed. I mean, you know, if you keep trying, you'll, just by definition of that, I think is heroic, Carrie. I really do. And yeah, it's interesting.
My agent said to me, I always go through these periods, you know, you have weeks that are fantastic and then weeks that are harder than others. And I was talking to my agent in Australia and just having a really hard time and just not getting the feedback or that I felt like I needed to keep on going. And he said to me that to just never get out of line, because you don't know where you're standing in the line. You know, you're in the line. You could be 2-3 people from the front of the line, but you've just got no idea. But if you get out of the line, you're no longer in the line.
So you've just got to stay there. It's quite interesting. Life is like that. That our life is 8 minutes in eight. Well, no, probably an 8-minute segment. In other words, I mean, which sounds a bit abstract and weird, but I mean, we live every day and we die once. And living is in 8-minute segments. I mean, when you die, you probably lose oxygen and go into cardiovascular kind of way. I mean, it's 8-minute segments. So each 8 minutes, and that's what it is. And I mean, I guess now they call it mindfulness, if you can live in the present and live in the moment. And for you, it's you're 100 pages away from your dreams. You know, you're one away from, I remember, and again, without kind of boring the listeners who may have heard the story before, but my first novel was rejected about 1,000 times, you know, and I kept going. And suddenly it just took one person to say yes that eliminated the 1,000 people that said no. And it changed
my life. Absolutely. Yeah, and that is such a common story. The number of successful people that I've heard that come out of It's so universal.
Do you know the tribe? It's interesting. The tribe, you know, people were saying it was like an overnight success. I mean, do you know that took about 15 years to bring together? It was rejected by so many broadcasters who ironically used to say, oh, it's implausible, that would never happen. And yet we're living it now. You know,
it is the most timely story. I can't believe how far ahead of your time you were with the creation of this, because it's just every year that goes past, it just seems more and more relevant of a story.
Do you know there's something really strange about it? Because when we did some flashback scenes, and the tribal brothers and sisters in our fandom will remember, you know, it's with Lex and Ryan being at boot camp, and we had a dance, and I for some reason always wanted the teachers to have these germ protective masks on, you know, and to stand them, and I couldn't understand why. It was just a logic thing to think, well, you know, they would want to, as they're doing now, you know, people in the States are wearing masks and all over the world, and the social distancing, so it's kind of weird, really, in virtual reality and all that stuff. And Ari, you brought so much to the tribe. I have to say, without embarrassing you, I mean, I often say, you know, when you don't, you obviously cast people for their talent, but it's also the look and things like this. So, you know, when an actor wouldn't get a role, it's not because they're not talented or a nice person. It's just, you know, sometimes it's just to weigh up different, you know, different looks with the other cast, you know.
But absolutely. The funniest one that I heard was that you can, if you look like an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend of the casting agent, you can miss out on the role too.
No, that's very true. But I mean, yeah. I also like to cast somebody with a good, what I call a good spirit. And I recognize a new area, if I may say, that a very special, you know, because Casey was born, I mean, stereotypically, we thought we'd be like the Artful Dodger, you know, in all the twists. But I thought he was a bit more than that. You know, somebody that had a great innovation and an ability to evolve and survive in that world. You know, so it wasn't just being like Jack the Lad, you know, the Artful Dodger. It was that cunning. And I thought that you brought a wonderful dimension and multi-layered element to your role. And how was it for you? How did you get the part? I mean, I know how you got the part, but... And the listeners, how did that come about for yourself? If you could
Well, firstly, thank you very much. I'm just so thankful that I had the opportunity at that time to be able to play that role. I'd never done anything. It was the first role that I've ever done. It was the first professional acting job that I've ever done. And what a soft cushion to land on. I'm so grateful for that experience and for your creation and for your family's work and just bringing that whole production to life. So I don't think I've really ever expressed how significantly that experience has shaped my entire life. It's directed my entire professional career and allowing me, I was so lucky to at such a young age have an experience that would direct me so pointedly for the remainder of my adult life. So personally, I'm incredibly thankful for that. Thank you for creating the tribe, and thank you to the fans for loving it so much, because it's really allowed an entire generation of creatives in New Zealand to grow. In terms of how I went about it, how I got it, well, the casting was done through schools, and I was the school that I was at was. I was really lucky. I had a teacher at my school who was very involved in performing arts, and to the point that one day a week he had created this program for those that were creatively inclined in the arts of singing, dancing, and acting, that we had an entire day that was dedicated just to that. It was a performing arts extension group. So we got to spend a whole day doing creating these incredible choreographed performances and things. And we got to travel around schools and do performances to other schools, local schools in the area. And I was put forward by that teacher to do an audition. And actually, also, funnily enough, a friend of mine whose mother was in continuity on the tribe. She was the continuity lady in the first couple of seasons. She also had put me forward as well. Wow. And then I went to an audition for the initial rounds of auditioning. And I think I auditioned for the role of Paul, who was the deaf character who was around for the first part, Patsy's younger brother.
That's right.
And then I think I might have auditioned for another character as well, maybe Jack or somebody. I can't quite remember. But I didn't, I think I got a call back for one of the roles, but I didn't get one of those. And then a few months later, I got called in for the role of KC. And I remember, I don't really remember going to the first audition for that, but I do remember coming to the Cloud Nine building with one other boy, and we were reading with Sarah Major, who was Patsy. And we took turns and went in and did a read through. There was, I think you were there, and Deb Callahan-Smith was there, and Jeff was there. Whether or not you were in the room, I remember meeting you all. And then I remember getting the phone call. I was wearing a pair of rollerblades in my driveway at my house, and my mum came out and told me that I'd gotten the part. And I remember just jumping up and down in my rollerblades, which, funnily enough, I ended up wearing a lot in the show as well as KC. Well,
right. But I mean, within 5 seconds, Harry, I thought, that's our KC, you know. And I was aware of your previous auditions, and that's why, again, it's important that, you know, you never, I mean, people see things as the way they are, not as the way they are, with the emphasis being on, you know, how you are, you see how the world is. And you would have thought, oh, maybe I wasn't good enough in that, or it didn't work, or where the reality is that, you know, I recognized in you something very special, Harry, and, you know, and thought, oh, this young man could be absolutely ideal for this character that was being written about Casey. And Harry, had you always wanted to get into the arts? I mean, anybody in the family, did you grow up always with a propensity as opposed to sport, you were drawn to artistic endeavors?
I was always a dancer and a singer and just a performer in general. And actually, funnily enough, you talk about the Artful Dodger, I think that year had just done my first stage production, and it was Oliver Twist. So I was in that. I didn't play the Dodger, but I kind of was adjacent to the Dodger. And I think I just innately kind of had a bit of cheekiness in me anyway, that I think lent itself really well to that character. But in terms of the rest of my family, my sister, who's just older than me, was really into singing. But no one in my immediate family actually was in any way connected to the performing arts world. My dad is quite a good artist, a drawer. But I think there's a distant cousin who was a musician who wrote songs. Was quite a successful songwriter, but other than that, not really. I think my mum always said she never knew where it came from, because it just didn't make any sense. But yeah, I was just drawn to it, and as I say, because I think I was exposed to people who nurtured that so much at such an early age in me, it brought it out. There was a potential there, and it was really nurtured in a way that allowed it to come out. And also what you're saying about in terms of being able to see something in me, and even in those initial auditions, which I'm so thankful for. But the same thing with anybody wanting to get into acting as well, is it's so, every audition that you do is so not about that role. It's about winning the room, they call it. It's about winning over the casting agents and making people your fan. It's winning fans in every room that you go into, and that is what will lead to things further down the line. It's not about, each failing isn't on its own, can be perceived as a failing, but in the grander scheme of things, it is a stepping stone to get you to the level that you want to get to.
Well, that's good advice, Harry. I think that's great. And how was it? Do you attend our tribe schools, I guess, there, yeah?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Up in the classroom.
And how was that for you as a young lad? Just your first role to walk on a set, and all the protocols and hitting your marks and learning your lines. What was life like for you, Harry? Your routine.
It was It was amazing. Like, we had school, like the classroom that we'd have to go to, and I was enrolled in the correspondence school, which as a very social young kid who loved the being around lots of other people my own age, I had a bit of a hard time with the independent learning. However, the learning that I was doing on set was just, I was learning so much more than I ever would have in a classroom. I mean, it really was the foundation of everything that I utilize now, from understanding etiquette of set and where I need to be and who I need to talk to and which person and which role is the one that I need to see for which thing. And it was really gaining the understanding of a set functioning like an orchestra, and you have your director who's the conductor who utilizes all of their instruments, and learning what all of those instruments are and how they can play best and how they can best be utilized. It's an amazing moving machine to be a part of, and at such a young age to kind of see that. It's really become like a second nature to me now. The set that I'm on right now, the young girl Libby who's playing Poppy, it's her first set that she's been on, and also another few young actors. It's their first production, and I feel really privileged to be able to help give them an experience that in some way could be a similar experience to what I had on set, and the amount of nurture and care that I had around me on the tribe to help educate and learn about what all those little things are. It's a really beautiful full circle to come back to. And every time that I get the opportunity to work with fresh, young, green actors, as they say, I find it incredibly an incredible privilege to be able to help pass along that knowledge.
That's terrific. That's a very special, you're passing that baton on, Ari, and that's lovely. It's interesting, you know, when I was young, my mentor was a man called John Briley. And John was a terrific screenwriter who actually was an Academy Award winner. He won the Academy Award for Gandhi. He did the screenplay. Amazing screenwriter. And he, you know, I have special needs myself, Ari. I'm on the autistic spectrum, and I can't spell. I really struggled. And I mean, my mother used to stare wide-eyed and think, what, you want to be a writer? How are you going to make a living doing that?
it's a bit of a hurdle to jump.
Yeah. You know, John believed in me. And in fact, he collaborated on our first novel, one of my first novels. And that was the one that was turned down by so many. And he went on to win an Academy Award. And I have to tell you that I didn't think the movie would ever get made. And I said, come on, John, you're wasting your time. You know, who's as great as Gandhi is? Will it work as a movie? Will it find an audience? Will it ever get made? And of course, it did. And so stick to my advice and you'll end up going down the tube, you know, because I said, he won the Academy Award for it. And it just shows how different. But he used to say to me, look, make sure you pass that baton on. So, you know, I am in a humble way and in an interesting way to you to this young lass who's playing her first role. And that's terrific and makes it very, very special. And so, Ari, you after the end of this movie, you'll head back to Sydney, will you?
Yeah, we go back pretty much the day after we finished filming. The amount of flights are still very restricted with all of the international closures and things. So we managed to get on a flight the day after we finished filming, and we go straight over to Australia, and then we got 2 weeks and 2 weeks in our own private hotel room, locked under lock and key.
A 2 week quarantine.
Yeah, and then back to some semblance of normality.
Yeah, and Ari, that you. Again, you recently married last September. You got married. Congratulations! And
thank you very much.
And your lovely wife. She's American.
She is an American. Yeah, her name is Tara. She's I met her obviously when I was in Los Angeles. She's one of the very few people that were born and raised in Los Angeles. She's also a creative as well. She does some very, very interesting, amazing, incredible stuff to see. She's a stilt performer and does some puppeteering and some fabricating and is just generally a very artsy and creative person. So she's so great to have around with any creative endeavor that I go into as well, because I trust her eye and her judgment so much. It's amazing, and it really has been fantastic. We went through 2 years of long distance when I left Los Angeles and moved to Sydney, which was really incredible for, I wouldn't wish anybody to have to be in a long distance relationship, but I will tell you, you do learn a huge amount about yourself and about the other person and the relationships that you are capable of building through the need for really good communication. It's definitely been hugely beneficial for our relationship. But now, fortunately, the long distance part of that is over for the most part. And we're living together in Sydney.
That's good. Was it love at first sight, Harry?
It was an interesting process for me. It was a process of surrender. I think as you go through life and the experiences and the relationships that you have, you learn a lot of things, good things and bad, and through hurt there's potentially walls that go up to protect you, and through past relationships that I found myself having quite a resistance to somebody who was so present and wanting me and all of me, and it definitely took me a bit of time to surrender into that. But she is an incredible person for having been able to do that and stick it out, and she, I'm so glad that she did, because she completely cracked me open, and I'm just so happy that she stuck around as long as she did, and we're now, I couldn't be happier, could not be happier.
An interesting thing, you know, that this is an old hippie speaking, but I mean, it's like Lennon. I mean, love is a four-letter word. We talk about it a lot. And when you love somebody or something, whatever it is, and I mean, the definition of, I think, existence is to give love and receive love. Otherwise, it's dysfunctional. I mean, first of all, you've got to love yourself, not in an ego way, but I mean, to fall in love with somebody and to be that vulnerable, where this person controls your life. And then I was very lucky, Harry. I met my wife when I was a teenager. I was young, and we've been together 50 years, over 50 that's, years.
That's and, incredible.
And this is very abstract, and this is autistic spectrum speak, but what does breakfast have to do with marriage? What does bacon eggs have to do with, what does bacon and eggs have to do with getting married?
Yeah.
You know, the chicken makes a contribution and the pig makes a commitment. Think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. It's all, there's a foundation there that is.
So, I mean, the pig.
All little things.
For bacon, the pig gives his life, you know. I mean, the chicken will give an egg and live to give another egg, you know. But I mean, and that's very interesting in life. And I very often, you know, you want people. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, not that you look at people and say, is this a pig or is this a chicken? But there's two kinds of people. There's a lot of people who are chickens and they'll make a contribution and they do well. The dedicated ones that will give it all, that will give their life metaphorically, just give 110%, is who we want to be with in business, in life, in whatever it is. And circling back, you at a very young age, Harry, was a pig. You know,
in the best way possible.
Because I thought, this is a young man that's got an inherent passion. You could feel that your love of the arts and your need to explore yourself, and that's lovely. And so, Harry, the your wife, she loves New Zealand.
She does, yes. We are in the process of gaining her New Zealand residency now, and also me, the green card for the United States, and then also doing visa stuff for Australia. So we are up to our eyeballs and forms and red tape and all of that kind of stuff. So the goal is to be able to live and work in all three countries, so that we can then make the decision of where we want to be, or be able to move freely between all of them. But she loves New Zealand. Yeah, absolutely.
So the industry is global, and you know you'll need to go wherever the movie is or the job is.
And I'll tell you what, the positive thing for New Zealand about the way in which they've decided to tackle this coronavirus in their actions is going to pay off massively for the film industry in New Zealand, because there's, I mean, talk all over the world about big, I mean, already we've got, you know, there's Avatars being shot here. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on that temporarily had to shut down. But there's so much more talk now of even more big international work coming to New Zealand, because we've got the infrastructure here. We've got the crews here. We've got the ability to work and shoot. And I mean, we're renowned as having some of the best, most professional crews in the world. People want to be here and people want to work. So hopefully the New Zealand film industry is going to kick off even into a higher gear than it's already in.
Yeah, I think so too. I've often said that New Zealand reminds me of Hollywood of the 30s, really. And I think that's a lot of the wonderful positive attitude. They call it number eight wire, which really is the Kiwis will look for a way to do something and make something happen, rather than, you know, if something, you know, look for a way not to make something happen. And it's very inspiring. And I think lots of talent there. Now, Harry, I've got a lot of questions coming in. So if you don't get to those, and I've got one from Watson. Good morning, Michael. Your spiky hair was flawless every episode. How did you get it styled to look the same for each episode? Did it ever bother you? I had spiky hair like you when I was your character's age. Ha ha. So, Michael, you were like an Harry Casey lookalike. That's interesting.
I'll tell you what. It was a process. It was a learning and an evolving process over several months to get that hairstyle down perfectly, involving many different hair products and processes. And by the end of it, we really got it down to a fine art. It was a problem more so for my family, specifically my mother, to be seen in public with that hairstyle. I remember one time, this story just still rings so true. I was raised Jewish, and I went to the synagogue one night after filming, and I went into the synagogue to put on a kippah, a yarmulke, the head dressing that we wear in the synagogue. And I still had the spikes in my hair, and I literally had to sit the yarmulke on top of my spikes, and it was just levitating above my head.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, but they ended up using a bunch of different products, and what they ended up landing on was the second season of The Tribe, they had started shooting Lord of the Rings in New Zealand, and there was a product that they used on the hair of people to flatten it out, so that they could put a wig on, or the bald cap for the orcs, so that it would be completely flat and it would stay down. And it was this product called Gaffquat, and it was just the most pure alcohol smelling resin textured substance I've ever seen in my life. And they would pull it out, and it would hurt like hell to put it right down at the base and twist it up. But once it dried, it was cement, and it was so powerful that I could go to bed and sleep on it for pretty much an entire week and come back to set the next morning, and they'd just have to tidy up the edges a little bit. That stayed up straight. If you look at the early episodes, every now and then you can see some spikes start to flop down a little bit. That didn't happen by the end of it. They were standing upright.
That's interesting. Now, I've got one from Evie Trans. Good morning, Evie. Evie said, as a Jewish person, have you ever visited Israel?
I have, Evie. I actually was really lucky to be a part of a Jewish youth movement when I was young, called Habonim Dror. It's a global Jewish youth movement. And in Zionist at its core, so part of the leadership program for that, to be a leader in the group, is I went to Israel when I was 17, and I actually lived in Israel for an entire year. and did a whole educational course and program. There are a lot of things like that with Israel because of what they call the right of return. Because Israel is the Jewish homeland, they want it to be open and accessible to anybody that is Jewish, that they can go to Israel. So they've got a lot of programs and opportunities for people to be able to take advantage of in your youth and also throughout adulthood. So I went over there and I lived there for an entire year, and I did, gosh, I did everything from milking cows on a kibbutz to teaching English in Arab schools to teaching English in Jewish schools, lived in the desert, met Bedouins, learned about the history of the entire area, and obviously went into the conflict and what it means and where it came from, and just learned so much about Israel. But I am definitely owing Israel a visit. It's a beautiful country. It's an incredibly complex part of the world. I would love to go back.
Tremendous experience, Harry. That's extraordinary. And did you enjoy it? I mean, emotionally, and it must have. It's a very profound. So multidimensional. All the elements to that. And
yeah,
do you feel at home? It sounds a weird question, but how do you feel when you go?
It's very interesting, actually, because in New Zealand, we have a very, very small Jewish community. So I've always, to a certain extent, felt that my life is compartmentalized, and that aspect of my life is compartmentalized because I didn't really grow up with any Jewish friends at my school or in my immediate world. It wasn't until the weekend where I would either go to a synagogue or I would go to a youth group that there was this small contingent of people. So I'd never really been around many Jewish people. And then I went on this course. First, we flew to Australia to pick up all of the Australians, to go with the Australians that we were with in our group. And I walked we're at Sydney Airport waiting for everyone to arrive. There were probably 250 people going on year-long programs to Israel, and all of their parents at the airport. And it was the most Jewish people I've ever been around in my entire life. So to go from that to then landing in Israel, where like 80% of the population is Jewish, and what was such a small segregated part of my life then became the day-to-day reality of the world, it was really overwhelming to start with. And I think, funnily enough, I definitely had a feeling of kind of being a fraud to start with, because especially the Australians, they grow up in such close-knit Jewish communities. And even in Israel, obviously, it's just their world. I kind of felt a bit like an outsider coming into something that wasn't really mine. But that definitely changed. And that year for me really developed quite a connection to Israel and an understanding of the history of everything. And it was a really, really interesting year for me. It was a huge year of growth.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to know your roots and to know the context to what it's all about, isn't it, really? That, as you say, if you feel like an outsider, it's the same in families or religions or that need to belong. It's very tribal. I mean, you need a tribe. You need to know who you are, where you come from, and what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I've got one from, bear with me, Levette Shelton. Hello, Levette. What happened to Casey and Alice? Did they survive? Just on that, Casey, we got books tied, as you may know, so we'll have to not get into that. All is revealed in the book tie-in, so if anybody's interested in those, we've got three novels out, the equivalent of season 6, 7, and 8. So I'd be given spoilers if we got too much into that. So sorry about that, Levette. But it suffice to say, Harry, that if I picked up the phone one day and said, look, would you like to come and do KC again 10, 15 years later, how would you feel about that?
That would excite me so much. That would be just absolutely incredible. I would be on board so fast.
Oh, well, that's that. I'd work with you in a heartbeat. And so that's interesting. Now I've got one from Gary Parkinson. Good morning, Gary. Harry was awesome as Flynn, the blue RPM Ranger. And then somebody's answering Gary saying, Ranger Operator 2 Blue. And then Gary's all saying, I loved his I'm Scottish line. So so I mean, some a lot of our tribal brothers and sisters are big fans of Power Rangers, so they'll
understand. It's amazing, you know, so many times at those conventions that I did, I just obviously autopilot would just expect people to they're appreciating Power Rangers, but so many times I have people come up to me and say, I'm a fan of you from the tribe. I love the tribe. And just so out of left field, because it's obviously not what we're there for. It's Rangers, but it's amazing how many people it crosses over. There's such a crossover of fandom. It's amazing.
Well, that's great, isn't it? So bear with me here. I'm just one from Julianne Mueller. Hi, Ari, were you ever bored with your role at the time? Any complaints? With best wishes from Germany and Switzerland. So that's an interesting one. Did you get a bit tired of it?
Honestly, no. In terms of like the story and that kind of thing, no. It was always so interesting, and there was always so many different things going on and happening in the way that the story developed. And I mean, KC was never short of a scheme or a thing to get involved in or whatever, so there was never any kind of boredom in that sense. I think in terms of the day-to-day, it's easy in any situation to become complacent and to become bored of the normality and the routine of things, but that's the same of any situation. It goes back to what we were talking about before, of just being present in the moment and being truly happy with what is, and not thinking I will be happy when this happens, or why do I have to do this, and just being appreciative of the process. So I think, yeah, especially as being very young on a show, I will say that I did miss my friends at school, and I missed just being a regular normal kid. I think that would be the thing that I, more so than getting bored.
Yes,
I don't think I ever got bored. I think I just By the end of that process, because it was about 3 years that I was on, and it was really a developmental period of my life. I was 10 until 13. So there's a huge amount of development that happens in that time. And you know, just starting off high school, I didn't want to be an outsider. And I think what I struggled with a lot after the tribe was, we have in New Zealand something affectionately called tall poppy syndrome. Which is where anybody stands out above anyone else, you come and lock them down. And I think I was really afraid of that happening, because obviously not many 10-year-old kids get to go off and be in an internationally renowned TV show. So it was prime target for that. So I think I was really just kind of, there was an element of me just kind of wanting to disappear into the crowd again. And just be a regular person.
Did you suffer any of the tall poppy syndrome, Ari? Or was that just an anxiety didn't come to fruition?
Yeah, I definitely caught a bit of flack from my peers at school, for sure. But it was actually, I think, something that's really actually worked out in my favor over the years, and retrospectively has really allowed me to grow and develop a lot more than if I hadn't received any of that flack.
Yeah. How so? How, in what way? Is it that you don't listen, or you don't let things like that bother you, or how is that?
I think
changed?
So. I think in terms of my resilience and my tenacity to do what I know is what I want to do, regardless of what other people think around me. Now that's not to say that it doesn't fluctuate. There's definitely times in which it does affect me, but at the same time, I think it really laid a foundation of such strength in knowing who I was and what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be and the creative things that I wanted to do. So I think it just really solidified for me that no, like, just because these people have, you know, are unhappy in their life, or they think that I'm different and that I need to be cut down, it just made me so much more confident in myself in the long term.
It's a very interesting thing, really. And I've been very fortunate in my career. I was made a professor at a university, and I was able to lecture to people in the creative arts sector who wanted to be acting, or particularly writers. And what I've said, I mean, I learned from my mentor, John Brierley, to respect and have a love for the process. You know, to fill the blank pages is a nightmare. It's like a self-inflicted nervous breakdown. It's
really, yeah.
You know what I mean? And for anybody that bears this, all of you, an actor, a writer, a singer, whatever it is, to me, there's no bad movies, only movies that have been made or not made, you know? Because some, yeah. I mean, who... The arrogance that somebody has a monopoly on what's good or bad is, it makes me, it's so negative, you know. And what I find is quite interesting because, I mean, and I was speaking with AJ Penn, who did our book tie-in novels, 99% of the feedback is very positive. But you get some people who, in the 1%, who will give it like a 1-star rating, you know. And it always amazes me. Yeah. These people are people that want to write themselves, you know, and you think, why don't you learn that to celebrate that somebody's actually taken the time to spend 3 months to write something? If you don't like it, that's fine, but don't go in this and do a 1-star. That's nasty, you know, to do a 1-star review. Like, just, you know what I mean?
It's a lot easier to write a 1-star review than it is to write a screenplay and to get a film made.
You know what I mean?
It's a shame. It's a real shame. But I think a lot of it from that side as well is probably a defense mechanism, because it's easier to be critical of something than it is to create something of your own.
It takes no talent to criticize. It takes no ability. Anybody can criticize. And people, obviously, I mean, everything everybody does, people are not going to love, but it's really that endeavor.
But that's the nature of art, though, isn't it? Art in itself is about perspective. It's about the artist's perspective of what they're presenting, and it's about the perspective in which it is received. If you're doing something with the intention that everybody is going to like it, nobody is going to like it.
Precisely.
You do something because it is interesting to you.
Yes.
And that will fundamentally resonate with people. It will resonate with some people. It will not resonate with all people, because not all people are the same. All people are not the same.
I totally agree. That's why, I mean, Cloud9 came into existence. I was lucky at the BBC to have a reasonably successful career, but we did a co-production with Disney, and Disney and the BBC saw one show a different way, where to satisfy the BBC's notes, you wouldn't satisfy Disney. To satisfy Disney, you wouldn't satisfy the BBC. And I became aware. I thought, well, ultimately, what you're saying is right. I mean, whether you do music or acting, or you fundamentally, you can't please everybody. You've got to please yourself. And otherwise, you then get something that's formulaic and not truthful. And the tribe, love it or hate it, is something I personally am very proud of. I mean, I'm very proud of A.J. Penn's novels. I'm very proud of your performance. If anybody didn't like your performance, I'd defend you, because I love it. You love it.
You should be incredibly proud of it. And you know, I did want to say this actually. I was talking to one of the girls who works in wardrobe on this production that I'm on. She's from Northern England, and she had a complete fangirl moment when she realized about 4 days into shooting that I was in the tribe, because she was such a massive fan of it. And she said to me today, I told her that I was going to go do this podcast with you. And she said, it's so funny, with 3 of my friends in the last week, the tribe has come up in conversation completely unrelated to the fact that I'm working with you. It just goes to show how it's not going away. It's just there. And it's so solidly a part of people's lives. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's very humbling, Ari. And no, I mean, we, you know, the letters we get. And in fact, that's why, you know, I mean, I'm very proud. I mean, the Cloud9 isn't me. It's a group of people, a team of people. It's the tribe is, I mean, the cast. I'm so proud of all of you, not just as your talent, but as people. I mean, as showing today, Ari, you're giving something back. You're taking the time. You know, that so often people, the other side of the preciousness, the purity of some people can get egotistical, some people can forget roots. But I'm so proud. We've got wonderful, you guys did such a great job and are such good human beings. And that to me is so important, where you you've been with me, Harry, on a journey for shoulder to shoulder since you were a little boy. You're here now.
Yeah,
I remember.
I'm just so thankful and grateful for that you created an environment where this could be birthed, and that you created such an incredible space for so many amazing people to come together and to bring your vision to fruition and reality. And it just goes to show that the testament that we're having a conversation about this 20 years later, it's just testament to how massive it was.
Yeah. And you know, the kind of tribal brothers and sisters of the fandom, they're so loyal. And for me, next Ibni, Harry, you know, thematically, the tribe was about building a better world, you know? I mean, eventually you'll become a dad and your grandchildren. And it is, I mean, Bray in season one says it, you know, I mean, what kind of world you're planning, you know? And this is about that, where, you know, we examined all those themes, and it did emotionally connect in a profound way and helped a lot of people. Why these, you know, these kind of podcasts come about, because I got a lot of letters or emails. I keep saying letters, emails. From very anxious. Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, every time I get an email, I say I get a letter, and my assistant slaps me. It's the same thing. It's communications. But they would look at the tribe as a learn from it, all the themes that we explored, from bulimia to social justice, self-reliance, virtual reality, all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And Aaron, how did you get through the lockdown period? How was it for you every day? Was it a bit of a life changing and eye opener?
It was definitely a very big pattern interrupt. It was, I'd say the first couple of weeks I found quite oddly difficult. I mean, you'd think just having, you know, just have a day off and have another day off and just have another day off. That sounds in theory really lovely, but I think not. I think the initial shock of not necessarily having daily purpose was a really big adjustment for me at the beginning. But I would say after about 2 weeks, we really kind of fell into a nice rhythm of filling our days with things that made us satisfied. And I feel like it was a call back to a simpler time that we just haven't experienced. I definitely haven't experienced in a very, very long time. There's just such a drive for productivity, and for creating and doing and being busy, that when you pull all of that away, when it's all taken away, it was a really interesting it was a really interesting thing to go through, of just finding satisfaction in just being present, and potentially nothing coming in the next day or 2 days or week or whatever. But I was really fortunate to be quarantined in a really beautiful part of New Zealand, very close to your home, where we could just go for walks through the countryside. My mum had just got a new golden retriever, remind me of Bob. we just got to have a really lovely time, and my wife and I spent probably the longest amount of time that I've been around my mum in years. Wow. So it was just really lovely. It was definitely, there were difficult parts of it, for sure, the beginning. But by the end of it, I mean, I just appreciated the time so much. I was very fortunate that I was working on production either side of the lockdown, so work wasn't a concern necessarily.
It's an amazing thing, really. I mean, as I've said on some of the previous podcasts, I love The Vineyard simply because it's a balance to Hollywood, Harry, you know? I mean, to slow down to the speed of life, to get on a tractor, you know, to look at the Mother Nature, the natural world, the beauties of Mother Earth. And I mean, it's, you know, climate and we've got way off as a human species with damaging our planet, you know, it's where this is a reset. And I know we say there's a lot of people you know, and our thoughts and prayers are with them who have lost loved ones through COVID, through this virus, and people economically that are hurting. But fundamentally, I found, you know, I've said it before, you know, you can't ignore the whisper of mortality that inhabits every fading sunset, but you must have time to look at that sunset. And I think
that's a really beautiful sentiment. It's very true.
Yeah, and you need that time to reflect and spend time with your loved ones and get away from all we chase in this fast-paced material world and to get back to basics. It's an old-fashioned way, really, and
absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
great town.
It's incredible.
Great town where your mum lives, and that's about a 20-minute drive from the vineyard, and for the for the listeners in New Zealand, they will obviously know Greytown and the Wairarapa, but overseas, how would you describe Greytown, Harry?
Greytown is it's a new old town. So there's been a lot of development there. It's got it's basically just a main road with residential areas off the back of it, a lot of shops, a lot of arts and craft stores, home decor things. The beautiful thing about the Wairarapa is each town is known for something different. Martinborough is the wine. Greytown is the home shopping. I think Carterton is books.
Yeah.
They're all for different things. So on the weekends, it's amazing. During the week, it's a very sleepy, they call it Greytown is kind of now a dormitory suburb of Wellington, so a lot of people that work in Wellington, they'll commute on the train every day in and out of Greytown, and places in the Wairarapa. So during the week it's quite quiet, but then on the weekend it just turns into this absolutely bustling main road with people coming from all of the towns around to do shopping, and it's incredible. There's a lot of young families there, a lot of people move, as I say, moving out of the main city center of Wellington and coming up. So it's a really, really beautiful place. If I was looking to buy property in and around Wellington, it would definitely be in the southern Wairarapa. It's a beautiful place.
I think it's interesting. It's kind of flourished again, even prior to this virus, where a lot of the city folk, as we would call them, the Wellingtonians who live in the city of Wellington, would like
to get out in the sticks.
Yeah, get out to the country, really, but Greytown is full of, as you say, antique shops and boutiques and restaurants.
Yeah.
I remember one of my cousins
lived in Greytown when we were very, very young, and I remember coming over to visit him, and I remember thinking, I would never want to live in a place like this, ever.
Yeah,
how your perspectives change, eh? I mean, obviously Greytown has changed a lot since then, but wow, what's important really shifts as you get older.
That's for sure. It's forever evolving, and it is. It's surrounded by the most beautiful countryside. I think with the Rimitakas and the hills and the mountains and absolutely beautiful. But sorry, I've got some other questions. One from Vicky.
Yeah, of course.
Vicky, as Ari, what did you enjoy most about playing KC?
What did I enjoy most about playing KC? There was so much that I enjoyed. I just getting away with it all. Even when I didn't get away with it, just being able to do all of the sneaky, dodgery things that KC got up to. I mean, this is what I love so much about acting anyway, is just the opportunity to express and live these existences that are not our own, that are in service of story and character, and not have to deal with the consequences of bad choices. It's so freeing, and KC made so many bad choices. It was great.
But do you know, it's interesting, Harry, that I loved the Oracle, you know, and with the Guardian's Oracle, and I found that such a wise and innovative, and I always used to think, looking at the rushes, because I'd always look at, as I say, the tribe, as opposed just as fiction, to look and think, what kind of world will this be? And I thought, well, if there's people, do you know something? If there's people like KC in the world, we'll be okay. Because
absolutely.
That innovation, that ability to, not in an artful, dodger, sleazy way, you know, but innovative way is to get an opportunity and seize it. And
absolutely.
And that's what KC did with The Guardian, where he realized, wow, I'm in here, this Oracle. And it was opportunistic, which was very innovative and entrepreneurial. And with that comes great success.
Absolutely. You know, it's so funny. And this I said to you briefly before, just the recounting of all of the story points. It's been so long since I've revisited all of these things. I just completely forgotten about that. And it's so true. He's such an opportunistic person, and it wasn't necessarily ever malicious, but it was just being able to see people's true colors and opportunities in those things.
Very empathetically was a very clever character, you know, and people would think it's a narcissist, but not, because, you know, he had that empathy to identify those kind of, I mean, the first is like in soccer. I'm a big soccer fan, Ari, and to be able to score a goal, you've got to get into the penalty box, you know, and to succeed, you have to put yourself in pole position. You have to get into pole position.
And absolutely.
And Casey certainly did that. And that's wise. And I've got quite a long one here. Ari, and it's from Jeffrey Crowell. Good morning, Jeffrey. Hi, Ari from America. I remember seeing you in a Disney Channel movie entitled You Wish, featuring American-based actors, blah, blah, blah. I enjoyed the movie, especially the scenes that you were in. I believe it was the first American movie you were ever in. What was it like playing a fried chicken delivery boy, dressed as a chicken and riding a chicken shaped like a bicycle? Did you enjoy or have fun filming that movie? Any fond memories from the set? I'm assuming it was filmed in New Zealand. What was that movie? Was that filmed in America or over here?
That was filmed in Auckland in New Zealand. Okay. That was so much fun. That was absolutely fantastic. I got to work with some really, really successful actors at the time. Some big Disney stars. There was a guy in there, AJ Troth, who was in Even Stevens, with Shia LaBeouf. The other girl, Lelaine, who was in Lizzie McGuire with Hilary Duff. And then the boy, Spencer Breslin. Yeah. He was in like The Kid with Bruce Willis, and he was massive. And he's actually the older brother of Abigail Breslin, who's a very, very successful actress now, who was a little munchkin of a child on set with us while we were filming that. It was amazing because it was my first exposure to the American industry, because it was American producers, American director. It was Disney Channel. But it was New Zealand crews, and it was in New Zealand. So it was a really beautiful, it felt like a very beautiful, safe introduction to the American market. It was great to see the scale and size of it. We had so much fun. I mean, the locations that we got to shoot in were just awesome. Like shutting down central Auckland, it was incredible. My favorite thing, I think that chicken bike was probably my favorite thing. the bum of the chicken, the back of the bike would drop down, and it was a little oven that you could store the pizzas in. I remember getting a pizza jammed over my head in front of a party full of people. It was so much fun. If it would come down to one individual thing, I think it was probably getting to ride that bike. That was great.
Sounds like a fun show. Now, I've got some from our Instagram account here. Bear with me, Harry, from Tay Torbay. What was your favorite thing of being Casey? Did you and Casey have similar characteristics? Did you recognize anything in Casey that you see in yourself, Harry?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a tenacity and a confidence that I feel like I've just always had, that I don't know where it came from, and just very naturally capable. I'm very good at just picking things up for the first time and just being very coordinated at them and getting the hang of things very quickly. And Casey took that a step further in being able to utilize that to his advantage, to position himself, as you say, to get into pole position for certain things. I just had so much fun playing him. There was a lot. I always had confidence as a kid, but KC was like on another level. Like, yeah. So it was amazing to be able to elevate myself to his level. It was amazing. It was so much fun to play.
That's nice. Well done. Now I've got one from Theatre Fan in Oz. Hey, Ari, you're kind of an in-between age to the other cast. You were older than Sarah and Jamie, but younger than the rest of the teens. How did you fit in with the cast given this? Also, why did you leave the series? Was it for school?
Yeah, that's actually really interesting because I was kind of in between. I was only maybe a year or so older than Jamie and Sarah, but I did feel kind of a little bit in between. It's really interesting because I look back. Obviously, I'm still friends with a lot of the cast, and whenever we catch up and kind of talk about these things, and I have such an adolescent memory of so much of this stuff. So my perspective on things is a little, I wouldn't say warped, but just young. Whereas the older people, they were like 16 or 15 or so at the time. So they kind of had a little more of a comprehensive understanding of everything that was going on. But it was amazing for me in my development because it kind of really made me mature very quickly to be in such a professional environment at such a young age. The reason that I ended up going back is because, as I say, I just missed being a regular kid and being at school. And I just wanted to get back to being around my friends every day. And I was missing all of the normal stuff that was going on. And I just really wanted to get back to that. Because, I mean, it was three seasons. So it was spaced out over the course of 3 years. And the way that we would shoot, obviously, as you know, is 6 months yeah. shoot period because it was 52 episodes. So there were double seasons. So it was a lot of work for 6 months. And then I would have maybe 3 or 4 months off back at school. And that process each season of coming in and out of my regular schooling, I found quite difficult to re-acclimatize to being back around kids. And I think I just got to the point where I just wanted to be back at school. But it definitely never killed my drive or desire to want to be a part of the tribe. And it was a very hard decision to make.
A lot of the tribal fans, they, you know, and that's what happened. I mean, and you and all the cast, I mean, we were quite aware of this, Ari, behind the scenes that, you know, when you're filming with young cast members and they got school and away from home and pressures and all kinds of things. And that's what, we sometimes we would alter the storylines if we felt a character was struggling or maybe not too happy. Because it is, it's like going into the army or to a boarding school or missing friends. And that's your formative years. And I mean, on one hand, it's very good. And as you rightly said, I'm very touched by that. It's very much in your formative years, but it's a lot of pressure. And it's multi-million-dollar productions and a lot of filming and not easy, that's for sure. So we were quite aware of that and had no problem whatsoever if, you know, sometimes Beth had to leave season two for education. She came back in season three and we were aware.
That's right.
Struggling a wee bit, missing your friends and you, the door always was open and indeed is always open.
Yeah, it's just so hard because, you know, I remember loving it so much and there was just nothing that right from that age, it was like I knew that's what I wanted to do and that's exactly what I was going to do. But it's just, it was.
But you've got to have it. Sometimes you need to, for your schooling, for your, you know, and we would have a chat with your mum and all the different parents and so there was never any problem. There was never, but that's why a lot of the tribal brothers and sisters always think, my goodness, why did that character suddenly disappear on this
version? Yeah.
We just had to amend it. And that's fine. That's all, when you're dealing with young people, as I say, it's not easy. And so, Ari, the hour's almost up, or I think we're over our hour allocated, so I don't want to I know you're filming today, and are you due to get back on the set today?
Yes, I am. Yeah, this afternoon. I've still got a little bit of time, but I will have to do a bit of preparing for the scenes that I've got this afternoon. So it's been fantastic to be able to reminisce about this. It's been a beautiful walk down memory lane.
No, and any message for any of the tribal brothers and sisters out there? Just on our, this is our 20th anniversary, actually. So on our 20th anniversary.
Just to say that I love you all and thank you so much for your love and support. And I feel so honored to be a part of this incredible world that means so much to so many people. And I'm just blown away every time I get to interact with the fandom and to really see how much it means. Because it's so easy to become a bit detached, especially to something that happened so long ago. So it's so lovely to see how alive it still is and how much it means to so many people. And as I say, I'm just so honored to be a part of that, and anything I can do to help in any way that I can be present with the fandom, I will jump at the chance.
Oh, that's lovely, Ari. And on behalf of all the fans and the tribe world, I'm sure I speak from them all to thank you for your contribution and for you to be on that journey. It was a great privilege and pleasure, Ari, to have known you all these years and to see you. I'm very proud of how your career is flourishing, and you're a tremendous young man and a very gifted actor, and we're definitely going to work together and enjoy some Pinot Noir in the vineyard when I get back. And well done, and you look after your love, Tara. She sounds a tremendous lady, and your mum, up to your mum as well. And
thank you very much, Ray. And to you, I just want to say thank you so much for birthing this incredible thing that we all love so much and that means so much to so many. You're an amazing man and an incredible creative brain and ahead of your time.
Oh, thank you, Ari. That means a lot. I appreciate that. Well, well done. Lots of love to you and lots of love to everybody out there in Tribe World. You can take care of yourself wherever you are. And on behalf of Ari and I, we both wish you well, Ari, and to stay safe and stay positive, and we'll get through this COVID situation and make the world a better place. And we're all part of the same tribe, and we're all a family within a family in many ways, Ari. And So good luck to everybody, and thank you, Ari. I really appreciate it, and you take good
care. You are most welcome. Thank you so much for having me, and everyone stay safe and keep your loved ones close.
That's good. Well, keep the dream alive, as we say, and good luck with your film, Ari, and we'll be in touch very soon. Thanks so much.
All
the best. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.